friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the July 11th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. This evening, we continue our preview of the 9th FIFA Women's World Cup football tournament, which kicks off next week in Australia and New Zealand. One of the players to watch is Sam Kerr, who will captain co-host Australia at her 4th Women's World Cup.
Yeah, I'm very honored. Anytime you go to a World Cup, whether it's your first or your third or your fourth, it's an amazing feeling, something you can never, ever take for granted, and I never will. But to do it on home soil is, I mean, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for not many people, so I'm very, very honoured. And, yeah, every time I talk about it, I get kind of emotional because I'm like, I can't believe we're going to be hosting a Women's World Cup. When I started playing for the Matildas, I could have never dreamt of this, so I'm very honoured, I'm very excited, and just want to get started.
Sam Kerr and the Matildas will get started on July 20th when they host Ireland in Sydney. And here are some fun Women's World Cup facts about Sam Kerr. She comes from a big sporting family. Her father, Roger, and brother, Daniel, both became professional Australian rules football players. Sam's grandfather, Denzel, was a featherweight boxer. And her grandmother, Coral, played competitive basketball. Growing up, Sam says she loved Aussie rules football 100% and hated soccer. Incredibly, only 3 years after taking up soccer, a 15-year-old Kerr made her senior Australia debut against Italy. She is now regarded as one of the best female footballers in the world and one of Australia's greatest athletes. In a FIFA.com video, Sam Kerr says she's been inspired by another great Australian athlete, the 2000 Olympic 400-meter champion, Kathy Freeman.
Kathy Freeman, I think she's the sporting moment that really changed how I thought about sport. Just watching how one person can be so focused and have the weight of the nation on their back, that really appealed to me as a kid. And I feel like we can have a Kathy Freeman moment. Everyone knows where they were when Kathy ran that race, and hopefully everyone knows where we are in 2023 when we walk out.
At the 2019 Women's World Cup in France, Sam Kerr scored 5 goals, putting her 1 goal behind England's Ellen White and Americans Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe, who won the Golden Boot. Rapinoe celebrated her 38th birthday last week. She says the 2023 World Cup will be her last major tournament, and she plans to retire from professional football at the end of the year. Like Sam Kerr, Ellen White, and Alex Morgan, this will be the 4th World Cup for Megan Rapinoe, who describes the 2023 competition as a game changer.
This World Cup feels almost like a, you know, show up and show out kind of vibe. I think it's going to be incredible. I said before, kind of paradigm shift globally. I mean, I think we're having it a lot in the U.S., but I think just globally, you've seen what's happened since last World Cup. There's so many examples of this, and it feels like this is like a paradigm shift or a moment we'll look back to and say like nothing was ever the same after this Women's World Cup and what we're going to be able to do. And all bets on the Women's World Cup. Money's in on that. I just think it's going to be an incredible event.
We just heard Megan Rapinoe say, money's in on that. Well, you can also say FIFA money is in on the 2023 Women's World Cup. FIFA is guaranteeing each player at the World Cup $30,000. Among those applauding FIFA's decision is African women's football analyst Sam Amadou.
Well, I think it's a big breakthrough for women's football globally, and also seeing how best to improve the quality of life for women's footballers world over, and understanding also how much the FIFPro has invested in ensuring this equality comes to play. And I think this is the long push that FIFPro has been on. And I think they have really made a very, very rich and amazing success, seeing how the discussion started with FIFA over how to improve and also increase the value of financial support coming to women's football, and also improving the returns and massive investment putting into women's football and also the Women's World Cup. I think it's also interesting that the National Federation also have been ending quite richly, and I think that hasn't changed considering what the benefit has been, even not forgetting that the clubs too do benefit from this. So I think for players to benefit this, I think we've seen that of the men happening for quite a long time, and now for women's players to begin to end, I think it's a massive breakthrough for women's football globally, not just in Africa. And I think it's a fresh means of also trying to boost the participation of young girls across the world in women's football. And I think this definitely will go a long way to enrich and also to revive the excitement, revive the love, and revive the commitment of parents to allow their girl child get involved in a sport like football.
African women's football analyst Sam Amadou. Meanwhile, more and more women in East Africa are getting involved in cricket. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports feature presentation, Magume Davis Rakawinge tells us more from Kampala, Uganda.
Janet Mbabazi, the female cricketer.
Yes.
Very good shot there from Giselle. Gives herself enough room.
Again, in the air.
Victoria Pearls, the Uganda Women National Cricket Team, engaged the United Arab Emirates counterparts in a cricket game in regional tournament Victoria Series at Rugogo Cricket Oval in Kampala. The game ended with the eventual tournament winners, Uganda Pearls, winning by 6 wickets after a series of victories against neighbors Tanzania and Rwanda and a Westaway match against Kenya. Uganda team captain Konse Aweko says she's delighted her team won the tournament. She says tournaments like this help players to become much better.
I believe we've learned a lot. Cricket itself in Uganda has developed, and many children are going to school because of cricket. They're giving bursaries to school children. Some people like us, we get the exposure to travel and represent our country, which is an honor to any other person out there. Any other person in the sports fraternity would love to be on that team, to wear your national jersey, wear that bird, the Ugandan bird on your chest, to go and represent your country. So it has been quite a nice journey. We've experienced a lot of travels. We have traveled around Africa, around out of Africa, Asia. I've been to Europe just because of cricket.
Joining the game some 13 years back, Aweko says he's grateful to have found some senior women cricket players who guided her through the game. Uganda Pearls first played the international match less than 20 years ago against neighbors Kenya in 2006 and was granted Women 2020 Series by the International Cricket Association in 2018. Aweko says she's glad the game of cricket among women is on steady growth in the country. She says she's pleased that the game of cricket offers same opportunities just like for their male counterparts.
We play the same tournaments. There is a girls' schools week, there is a boys' schools week. They give them equipment, they give us equipment. The same coaches are given in different schools. When it comes to officials, they give the same officials. Like, it's more of equality. When the men have contracts, even us women, we have contracts. So I don't think that there is a lot of challenge that can affect a girl child in cricket, more or less in Uganda here, because I believe everything they do is about equality.
One member of the Kenya Cricket Board tells us how she started the game of cricket as a young girl.
My name is Berry Loyugi. I'm an ex-Kenya Cricket International and now a Cricket Kenya Board member. I began playing cricket in 2003 when still in high school. When we began playing cricket, first of all, as women, we could not play hardball. And being in high school also, we could not play hardball cricket. So we began with softball cricket. For about 3, 4, 5 years, that's when I began playing hardball. So I can say right now the game has advanced away from that. You find kids in primary school and high school starting cricket with hardball, and that helps them develop their game really fast. So for us, it was a slow incline to be inducted into the hardball game.
Oyoge went on to play 13 years for her national team. Sarah Uwela plays for the Rwanda national cricket team, where has been playing cricket for 10 years. She says it was actually easy for her mastering the game.
Cricket is a nice sport. It's somehow addictive, and it has many chances. I mean, because the first year that I represented my country is the same year that I started playing. So it has many chances, and it's a sport that is growing very fast in the country.
She's grateful for the support she gets from her fans, in particular, her number one fans, her family.
They also didn't know the sport before I started playing it, but they ended up liking it because they support me, and they see that it gave me some discipline. Like, when you're a professional player, a professional sports, you gain some discipline with the sport and also out of the sport.
Rwanda women national cricket team first played against Uganda in 2007. The country annually hosts the T20 series Kwibuka tournament, bringing members from East Africa, Namibia and Nigeria. It is played in remembrance of the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi. Uwera is grateful she's represented her country both regional and international meets, such as the Nigerian Invitation in 2019, where Rwanda played against host Nigeria in Abuja, losing by 9 runs. Leonard Nambulo has been the head coach for the Rwanda national women cricket team since 2021. Nambulo says he's pleased with the performance of his girls in the just concluded Victoria Series tournament.
With the performance that this team is putting up in the past 2 years, it shows that there is something right that is being done to make sure that the team is competitive enough to win important games, and also the structures that we did put in place in terms of selecting the good players that we've got. I think those are some of the things that we've done well. I mean, look, we're beating a team that are highly ranked above you, team like Kenya, team like Tanzania, in this tournament. I think that is something that is good for us, and it's something that even motivates the ladies as well to know that they are no longer a small team again anymore in terms of the game of cricket, which means anytime from now we can even beat any team that can come out. Even if you look at the performance that we've showed against Uganda, even against it shows that now, whatever that you are doing, we are closing the gap between the bigger teams and us.
Rwanda defeated Kenya and Tanzania and put up a satisfactory performance against host Uganda and UAE to finish respective fourth position, the same 4 points as UAE and Tanzania, and just 1 position above Kenya. Namburo says parents should support their daughters just like they do for their sons to play the game of cricket. He says women in South Africa have the ability dominate the sport globally. Michael Grace Ndiko, who coaches both men and women cricket in East Africa, agrees.
With women's cricket, you have to be a little bit more considerate. You have to know what each individual player desires or wants to have. Not that you become personal, but you make sure that you are taking care of each individual's concerns and interests. Unlike the men's game, where you tend to just group them up and it's okay with them. So that's a major challenge, first and foremost. So it means you have to improve your interpersonal skills between yourself and the entire players and the, management team. You have to make sure that you take care of that. The girls are really playing some very good cricket, especially evidenced with this most recent tournament. It has been a very wonderful exhibition of cricket, a show of talent and commitment, discipline, showing that really cricket as a sport in East Africa, especially for women, has grown in leaps and bounds.
Perisi Zakayo plays for the Tanzania women team. She's also riding support for women cricket in the region.
People are thinking that cricket is for men only, but it's not. We women, we can play it. Women will have a larger chance than men's. You can see there's a high and big challenge to men cricket, especially in choosing the player to present the country. But in women's, it's not that tough.
There is less competition. Both players and officials say, with improved infrastructure, the game of cricket in the region will just blossom. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Ogume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala.
Hello, listeners. My name is Perisi Zakayo. I am a cricket player from Tanzania. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook, Twitter, and at voaafrica.com. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. My Twitter handle is at VOA Sunny Sports. And if you go to voaafrica.com, you can listen online to the Sunny Side of Sports as well as past episodes. Check out voaafrica.com. Tunisian tennis star Ons Jabeur routed two-time champion Petra Kvitova Monday 6-love and 6-3 to advance to the quarterfinals at Wimbledon. Jabeur will next play 2022 champion Elena Rybakina in a rematch of last year's Wimbledon final. Ons Jabeur is trying to become the first African and Arab woman to win a Grand Slam title. Speaking after her easy victory over Kvitova, Jabeur said she's always dreamed of being a Grand Slam champion.
I don't know, when I picked up the racket, it's like I was born to play tennis and I was born to just achieve this dream. And I was telling my mom, I want to win a Grand Slam, I want to be this, I want to be number one. And I never knew what's being a Grand Slam champion or playing in this sport. And I got to discover it since the young age, and I'm playing a lot of tournaments. So I'm a dreamer. I was born this way. And I think that no matter what you do to me, I always believe that I can do anything in this world. I kept doing my thing, kept enjoying. And obviously, Melanie Mayer, who's my mental coach, did help me a lot, believing more in myself. And I do believe I can believe more in myself in this level. So hopefully with every work that we're doing together, I can improve more mentally and be able to maintain and be in these higher stages.
Jabeur also reflected on her loss last year to Rybakina in the Wimbledon final.
I think the first 1 or 2 weeks I thought about it a lot, and it was very painful. But the good thing about it is I know I gave it everything, and I'm someone that believes that it wasn't meant to be, so I cannot force it more than it should be. And I'm glad that I have this belief. I believe in destiny. It wasn't supposed to be that year. And maybe greater things are coming, you know, after that final. And definitely we'll learn a lot from it. Obviously, the next match is completely different. It's a quarterfinal. It's a completely different position. So I'm going to do my best. And the most important thing that I give 100%, and I try not to regret anything.
Meanwhile, one of the Cinderella stories at Wimbledon involves a men's player described as a gentle American giant. First time Wimbledon quarterfinalist Chris Eubanks.
Dream come true. Yeah, it's tough to really put into words, but to be able to come out today and play the way that I did and just kind of take everything in, it's surreal. I can't really describe it. It'd be better if you guys asked questions. I think that might make things a little bit easier.
Okay, Chris, I'll ask a question. Chris, after your 5-set upset win over fifth-seeded Stefanos Tsitsipas, you're now the only American left in the men's draw at Wimbledon. What's your best Wimbledon moment, Chris?
I don't think there's one in particular. I think there's a few different ones. Everything from realizing that I have 2 credentials at Wimbledon for the rest of my life, to checking my phone and seeing my name as an ESPN alert, to realizing how much I disliked grass at the beginning of the grass court season to now look at where I am. Like, there's just so many different ways I could go about it, but I just think the entire experience altogether has just been a whirlwind, and it still hasn't been that window of time to kind of process everything. It's just been, like I said earlier, just focusing on the next match. Okay, well, when I finished Mallorca, I knew that I played Thiago Montero first round. That's where my focus shifts. And then after that, move on to the next match. That's where my focus is. And then that, and it's just kind of continued to go on from there.
Chris Eubanks will next play the Russian Daniel Medvedev in a Wimbledon quarterfinal match on Wednesday. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
The Voice of America's English to Africa service is celebrating its 60th anniversary on August 4th. Help us celebrate by sharing your thoughts about the sunny side of sports. Send a voice message or text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202-258-3076. Recall a favorite memory. That number again, +1 202-258-3076. And thanks for 60 years of support.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-Minute VOA Newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Now let's go to the northwest U.S. city of Seattle, Washington, where Major League Baseball will hold its 93rd annual All-Star Game later Tuesday night. The game will be played at T-Mobile Park, the home field of the American League's Seattle Mariners team. The AP's Gethin Coolbaugh tells us about the All-Star pitching matchups.
New York Yankees ace Gerrit Cole will start Tuesday night's All-Star game in Seattle for the American League, and Arizona's Zach Gallen will open on the mound for the NL. Cole will start for the first time in his sixth All-Star nod. He is 9-2 with a 2.85 ERA and 123 strikeouts. Gallen, a 27-year-old right-hander, is 11-3 with a 3.04 ERA. He's tied for the Major League lead in wins. Members of the Yankees and Diamondbacks are All-Star starting pitchers for the first time since Roger Clemens faced Randy Johnson in the 2001 game at Seattle. I'm Gethin Coolbaugh.
Thanks, Gethin. Ahead of the All-Star game, a Toronto Blue Jays slugger won the league's home run derby contest. The AP's Chuck Freeman has that story, as well as some National Basketball Association news.
The annual home run derby on the eve of the All-Star game in Seattle, Toronto's Vladimir Guerrero Jr. won it by beating Tampa's Randy Arozarena in the finals. Vlad Jr.'s dad, Vladimir Sr., won the derby in 2007.
Very happy, very proud of my father and I. We both won the derby.
Victor Wembanyama, the NBA's number one draft pick, will be shut down after two summer league games with the Spurs. He was impressive in both, averaged 18 points in the two games. The Portland Trailblazers are holding out hope that Damian Lillard might change his mind. He wants to be traded to the Miami Heat. Chuck Freeman.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the High Energy July 11th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Zimbabwe's Football Association has welcomed the lifting of an 18-month ban by FIFA the sport's international governing body, which will allow the country to once again compete in international matches. Now, FIFA imposed the ban after government interference in the association over alleged misappropriation of funds. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Zimbabwe.
FIFA banned Zimbabwe from international matches in February 2022. The governing body acted after the government in Harare tried to take control of the Zimbabwe Football Association on the grounds it had failed to account for some funds and did not investigate alleged cases of sexual abuse toward female players by football officials. The situation have yet to be resolved, but FIFA chose to lift the ban as scheduled, with the draw for the next World Cup set to take place in Ivory Coast this Thursday. The end of the ban comes as a relief to football fans in Zimbabwe, where the sport has grown in popularity in recent years. Speaking to reporters in Harare on Tuesday, Sports Minister Kesty Coventry said the ban was beneficial to Zimbabwean football in the long run.
100% it was worth it. It was hard. It came at a certain cost that we all knew before we took the decision. But to get to this final stage where we can sit down and agree finally on a way forward that is going to benefit us as a country, 110% it was worth it.
Lincoln Mutasa is the chairman of a normalization committee mandated by FIFA to hold elections for the Zimbabwe Football Association and investigate the sexual abuse and corruption allegations. He had somewhat different view than Coventry about Zimbabwe being penalized.
It was hurting not only the sports people, but ourselves, all the sports parents in the country. You know, you put so many hours to try and get your kid to excel in a sport. And when this doesn't happen, or when this is frustrated, it's a big mountain to climb. So I'm really delighted and really thank all the parties involved for finding each other.
FIFA's manager for development programs in Africa, Solomon Mudege, says that even though the ban has been lifted, Zimbabwe's government needs to stay out of the association's affairs. He said FIFA, the government, and the Zimbabwe Football Association need to have open communication to avoid disruptions in the future.
I can assure you in the next coming days, you will see a more transparent FIFA in how they share what is important and how they share the investments from governments, the investments from FIFA. It's something that we're proud of. So there's no change in FIFA's approach. What we do encourage, though, is more engagement within governments. We shouldn't be talking to each other in situations of crisis and conflict.
The end of FIFA suspension means Zimbabwe will be part of the draw Thursday and on the field when the World Cup qualifying matches begin in November. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Thanks, Columbus. And that wraps up the July 11th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in.
I get it.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports.